Hi everyone. So here we are with episode 2 of the Halloween Countdown 2020. Woo! So today I'm going to be talking about some vintage hauntings in Canada. The first story is known as the Mary Ellen Fire Spook out in Nova Scotia. And then I'll be talking about the story of Goblin Hollow out of Prince Edward Island. So be sure to check out my social media page so you can find out how to enter to win my amazing giveaways. Every time I release a new episode, go to my social media pages. So that is at Real Scary Podcast on Facebook and or Instagram. And through there, every single time you'll be able to enter. So you can enter multiple times. So let's get started. Let's get into this show. So as I said, the first story is known as the Mary Ellen Fire Spook, or the Fire Spook of Caledonia. This story happened to a family who lived in a small farmhouse in Caledonia Mills in Antigonish, Nova Scotia. Now their names were Alexander and Mary MacDonald and their daughter, 16-year-old Mary Ellen. In January of 1922, a mysterious fire broke out in their home. Mysterious because it was not near their fireplace or their wood-burning stove. And when the fire was extinguished, another one broke out in an empty room in another part of the home. So when one was put out, others would flare up. They would even start on damp towels and even pieces of wallpaper. This was very strange indeed, and the MacDonalds enlisted neighbors to help guard the house from a possible arsonist. All the while, fires continued to spontaneously appear, and no arsonist or intruder was ever caught. Reports claim that there were approximately 30 fires with no explanation. Prior to the beginning of this phenomenon, there were some other strange things that the family was noticing around their farm. Ashes would be found in the stored milk. Livestock would suddenly have braided tails or be moved to different stalls altogether, and sometimes even be found locked out of the barn and would be very agitated. Now the question, of course, is why would someone take the time to do these things? And perhaps more importantly, how could someone do this and not be seen? Of course, farmhands and Mary Ellen denied any involvement. So when the fires began to plague the family, it seemed clear to them that something malevolent was trying desperately to kill them with fire. The Night of Many Fires, as I'll call it, sent Mary and Mary Ellen to their neighbors, the McGillivary's house, for help. These two men returned with them and also witnessed fires starting under impossible circumstances. Finally, the McGillivary's suggested that the MacDonalds come to their home until they can figure out what is happening. Alex MacDonald had to return later to check on the livestock, and it appeared that they were all undisturbed and where they should be. The home was still standing and seemed as though there actually hadn't been a fire since they left. Of course, their neighbor's hospitality was much appreciated, but the family knew that it couldn't last forever. And really, they wanted to go home. So Alex reported the incident to the local authorities. But when word got out to the media, journalists and paranormal investigators descended on the home. Two of these investigations in particular had some experience of note in the home. Harold Whidden, a Halifax reporter, and police detective Peachy Carroll spent two nights in the home and both experienced strange phenomena. Both felt slaps on their arms and faces, and it was definitely interesting that Detective Carroll spoke out so openly when really he had a lot on the line with his reputation as a policeman. Dr. Prince of the American Society for Psychical Research investigated this case, and his findings would be seen as final. This was due to his high standing in the community. Harold Whidden accompanied Dr. Prince for 3 weeks as the home was investigated, but Prince actually only stayed in the home for 6 days. Whidden noted that Prince didn't seem to be concerned with anything except complaining about the cold in the home. He also said that no one could stay with him during the investigation, including the family. Though at one point he did invite the family back in to see if it would spark activity. During the investigation, Whidden was supposedly possessed by the poltergeist and wrote a confession to the fires. Prince agreed and said that he believed that the poltergeist was attached to the daughter, Mary Ellen. But when he made his final report, he said that the fires were set by Mary Ellen in a dissociative state. He said that he had found some flammable fluid and said that the fires were no doubt set by human hands. The burns were also never set more than 5 feet in height, which is the height of Mary Ellen. When Mary Ellen staunchly defended herself, saying she would never set fires, Dr. Prince came back saying that she had the mind of a 4-year-old, suggesting that she was an unreliable source. Others who knew her, however, said that she was of normal intelligence and a kind girl. Prince went further and said that this was another fake case. She was probably sleepwalking or possessed when the fires were set. He also said that the experiences by Whidden and Carol were likely hallucinations from the cold. The only strange thing that he did admit to was that once he was back in his offices in New York, he heard strange rapping sounds for several weeks thereafter. The McDonalds moved back to the farm just months after, and things appeared to remain calm, but by October, things started back up again, and with the same unexplained circumstances. However, after Dr. Prince's scathing report, most of the public provided no sympathy for the family. Now, the reports vary on what happened to Mary Ellen. Some say that she was taken to an institution where she remained for years, and others say that she moved to Central Canada and lived out her life with no further incidents. The house in present day is but a few remnants of foundation, and some say there is still some of the barn foundation as well. Many who have visited the land have said that they have seen ghosts and that there is a curse upon the land. If anything is taken from this land, be it a stick or a rock, your home will burn to the ground. This is believed to have been tested by people who say that no matter where it is put, a shed, your house, wherever, that the building will catch fire. Other strange occurrences are that people will experience trouble with their vehicles, and it's said that some locals won't even drive down the road at night. So I thought that was a really interesting story. So tell me what you think. Let me know if you visited the site of the Mary Ellen fire spook. Also, please, please don't test the theory of taking something from the site. I really don't want listeners' houses to burn down. This October, our friends over at The Haunted Walk are inviting you to take part in a massive paranormal experiment. The Haunting at Home is an online interactive audio experience you can do in your own home, apartment, or creepy cabin in the woods. This ghostly adventure will challenge you to conduct a series of paranormal experiments in the dark. It's the perfect night of spooky fun if you love ghost stories or enjoy the thrill of trying to contact the other side. So grab a group of friends and follow the program. Will you make it to the end, or will you have to pull the safety hatch? I had the pleasure of testing this out earlier this week, and I did end up pulling the safety hatch, but the best thing about this is that you have an unlimited access for 90 days. So you can try and try again. I highly recommend this as something to do this spooky season. It's $34.99, and if you use the promo code REALSCARY, R-E-A-L, S-C-A-R-Y, you will get 20% off. Simply visit hauntedwalk.com/thehaunting and click buy now. Out of the first 36 experiments conducted last month, 86% of groups experienced activity and 14% had to use the safety hatch. You might be thinking, well, my house isn't haunted. It doesn't have to be. All you need is a quiet place, a few other supplies, and an open mind. Will you connect with a spirit, or will your imagination simply get the best of you? Happy haunting, everyone! So the next story I want to talk about is Goblin Hollow in Prince Edward Island. What occurred here in May of 1859 was a brutal murder that would forever taint the town and the land. Annie Beaton was 40 years old. She was a mother to a 1-year-old baby. The father was an unnamed man from the community, and she remained unmarried. For the time, this would have certainly been a negative against her, being unmarried at this age and also having a child with no husband. I just want to point out as well that I think there were some misconceptions about her in the community, and that followed her after her death. A newspaper article in The Islander on May 20, 1859 was as follows. A woman named Anne Beaton, of about 41 years of age, single and residing with her brother Murdoch Beaton on the Murray Harbor Road back settlement, left her home on the afternoon of Thursday the 12th and did not return. And searching having been made on Saturday morning last, the 14th instant about 11 o'clock, the body of the deceased was found by her brother Murdoch in a copse or grove of bushes, within some 400 or 500 yards of the home that she had left on Thursday morning previous, mangled terribly, no less than 16 wounds having been inflicted on her head, neck, and mouth. Her brains were knocked out and her teeth driven in, and her mouth horribly cut. Another paper on the 23rd was even more explicit about the details of her murder. She was found dead in a field at the back of the farm, her head and face dreadfully mangled with cuts and bruises and her skull driven into the brain in several places. A portion of the brain with two teeth and large particles of skull and bone were found near the body in a pile of blood. Now, one article did say that because she was a mature woman, she would have been aware of the dangers of walking alone at night, especially being a woman. So that kind of shows you already blame was put on the victim. Now, the settlement was outraged and scared following the brutal events. They wanted to find the killer. The timeline was quickly pieced together. On Thursday, May 12th, Anne left her home around 4 for her neighbor, Mrs. McPherson's home. On the way, she stopped at another neighbor's house, the Mathesons. She made it to the McPherson's and visited with the Mrs., taking tea and then departing around sunset for home. Mrs. McPherson says that she told her to stay the night as it was dark and dangerous for her to walk alone, but she said that she had way too much to do the next day. So despite the warnings, she set off for home. It should be noted that her walk would have been about 15 minutes, so she obviously felt confident that she could make it there and she would be okay. Anne's brother Murdoch was away for work, which was later corroborated, and he didn't return until the next evening. Surprised to see that his sister was not home and hadn't been the night before either. So the next morning, by 11 a.m., he had found her body at the rear of the Murdoch's property. The community claimed that they saw him running barefoot and screaming in Gaelic. Her body was then removed to a barn on a nearby property for the coroner's examination. He concluded that she had been raped and bludgeoned to death. A few days later, a grubbing hoe was found near the place where Annie's body was discovered. It was concealed under a fence and covered in blood and hair, believed to have been from the victim. The hoe belonged to the Matheson family. Archibald Matheson was a suspect of the community, and he seemed to have a habit of forcing himself on women in the community. He had, in fact, had 3 separate women accuse him of accosting them. He was also quoted as saying that he, quote, told his wife to keep Anne Beaton from the house as it caused some ill will with some of the neighbors. So this struck me as odd. Why would it cause ill will? Could he have been the father of her child? Or suspected father of her child? There isn't any proof or anything further about this, but it definitely made me wonder. The Mathesons were arrested, but freed on bail immediately. The case was eventually dismissed, and in a community as small as this, Archibald was actually a member of the jury in the initial case trial. So how the frick does that work? It also seems as though the community blamed the victim for getting herself murdered, which I mentioned earlier. Her body was treated as a spectacle. Literally, as people left church on the day that her body was found, they heard her brother screaming and they all went over to have a look. Other theories arose later that hypothesized that maybe she was meeting up with a lover or something of that scandalous nature. So this did affect the community for years after and even to present day. For years after, women would not go out in the dark to even get their washing from the line. Children would avoid the hollow and said that when they would go fetch the cows, they would hear a cowbell from the hollow, but no cow was present there, as if something was luring them in there. This spot also became a test of courage for children in the area. They would tie a handkerchief with a penny inside to a tree near the hollow that was said to have drank the blood as it seeped into the earth that night. The boy who was brave enough to go back in pitch black night and take the penny would earn the right to keep it. There were also folk songs written about Annie Beaton. Others claim strange occurrences like animals being scared at that particular spot and even people being thrown from their wagons as they passed Goblin Hollow. It was commonplace as well. I read another article where someone had said that the only reason he wasn't thrown out of his carriage at that spot was that he prayed the entire time as he went past. Now, to this day, people claim to hear crying, screaming, or wailing in this area, and some even refuse to drive past at night. So that's definitely creepy. And I have seen some maps that show where the hollow is believed to be. So I will post that on my blog for you to check out. So that's all for today. I will be back soon with the next installment of the Halloween Countdown. Thank you so much for tuning in, and let me know if you've heard these stories before, or better yet, if you've been to the sites. Check out my social medias again for how you can earn your entries into the Halloween giveaway. Instagram and Facebook can be found at Real Scary Podcast. You can also shoot me an email just to say hello or send me a story, whatever you would like, at realscarypodcast@gmail.com. So stay spooky. This is your friendly neighborhood host, Elise.